are Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome into a Tuesday edition of Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. Thanks for listening and for subscribing. I'm Wes Goldberg, and I'm here with Ben Golliver from the Washington Post. We had two games on Monday night that we're going to talk about, Ben. It looked like both of them were heading to blowouts. And then the Warriors, after opening up a 31-point lead, gave that lead away to the Los Angeles Clippers. And we're going to start with that game because that was an insane comeback, Ben. That was the biggest comeback in NBA playoff history. 31 points for the Clippers. And look, I was there. I was at the game. And after the game, Steve Kerr, Klay Thompson, Steph Curry, they all of them kept saying, "Look, we're confident. They're disappointed in the loss, but hey, we'll bounce back. You know, we've done this before. We've been in the playoffs before." But I'm almost to the point here, and I've said it on this podcast before. I do think that the Warriors are a little bit more vulnerable than they were. But this is weren't the 35 point losses to the Mavericks, the losses to the Phoenix Suns at home, weren't those supposed to be for the wake up calls? Like, should we still be getting wake up calls in round one of the NBA playoffs?
Well, look, I mean, you don't like that if you're a coach. I'm sure it drives Steve Kerr absolutely nuts. But to spin this kind of positively for them, first of all, you built the 31-point lead. Second of all, you ran the LA Clippers off the court in game one. I think third of all, it happens early in a series, so you've got plenty of time to pull yourself together. And then I think fourth of all, the Clippers' home court advantage there in game three and four in Staples Center. I mean, that's going to probably be a pretty mixed crowd. I'm sure there's going to be lots of Warriors fans in attendance. So long story short, it definitely could have been worse for Golden State, and they've survived, I think, bigger tests together, you know, during their postseason runs in the past. But still, I mean, this was absolutely unacceptable. I think not only the quantity of the lead that they blew, but sort of how it happened. I mean, you look at Kevin Durant's box score line. Didn't he have more turnovers, 9, than field goal attempts, 8? I mean, that's completely crazy. I can't imagine that's happened too often in Kevin Durant's career. I understand there was reports that, you know, he left after the game without talking to media members. That's always a red flag. And clearly, you know, Kevin's been up and down for months here, you know, from an emotional standpoint and an engagement standpoint with the media. I saw he came out and apologized and tried to be the bigger man and take the high road before game 2. Clearly, you know, this is going to be a case of one step forward and one step back. But I'm curious, Wes, how did the crowd and how did the media take it in there at Oracle Arena? Because they've seen their share of blowout victories, you know, over the years. And I'm sure a lot of fans at home probably tuned out, you know, midway through the third quarter. What was it like in the building as Golden State let that lead evaporate and as they kind of crumbled and gave up some open shots and missed some of their own shots there late in the game?
It was, you know how Oracle like gets really loud for Steph Curry every time he like shoots a three or something like that. But there's right before the loudness, right before the roar, there's this anticipation, this silent anticipation. It almost felt like that, and that silent anticipation tends to just last between, you know, the ball leaving Steph's hands and whether or not it goes down or not. That anticipation was sort of just there for the entirety of like the second half, the third quarter, and all of the fourth quarter. Oracle, like, the fans there were just, like, waiting for the Warriors to just wake up and fix this, you know? Like, oh, yeah, you had a 31-point lead. Everybody's having a party. You're jogging towards this Game 2 win. You're going to have a 2-0 series lead going down to L.A. You're going to sweep the Clippers, the eighth seed, blah, blah, blah. And all of a sudden, that 31-point deficit is gone, and you can kind of – all the fans sort of snapped back, and they were like, okay, wait, so now we actually have to do stuff here. We have to, like, cheer on this team. And they were just waiting for something to cheer about. But Steph – he got into foul trouble in that third quarter. He picked up his fourth foul. He only played a couple minutes in that third quarter. Durant, who you mentioned before, he picked up his sixth foul with a minute and 21 left in the game, and he fouled out. And you know, I'll say that the fans were disappointed after the game, but I'm walking the halls of Oracle down to the media interview room after the loss. Fans were disappointed, but I kept hearing people say, oh, you know, this will be the one time they lose in the postseason. That was kind of the idea. I just kept hearing that. Like, oh, you know, they'll be fine. They'll be okay. This is their wake-up call. They'll snap back into it. This will be, you know, I promise, this will be the one loss that they have. They're going 16-1. I'm like, not to go back to the original point that I made, Ben, but I'm not so sure. Like, I'm not overreacting. I'm not going to say the Clippers are going to win this series, right? But here's what I'm going to say. If the Warriors have this bad habit of beating themselves. They have all regular season, and they just did it again tonight. And I don't want to take anything away from the Clippers. They scored 85 points in the second half. Lou Williams was unbelievable. Montrezl Harrell was crazy. He had 25 points and 10 rebounds. He was just amazing for them. But the Warriors lost this game, and they blew this game, and they have had a tendency to do this before. And I don't think that anybody in the league is going to beat the Warriors 4 times out of 7. But if the Warriors beat themselves once in a series, well, now all you have to do is beat them 3 times out of 7. That's easier.
It's a good point. I mean, look, every comeback, you know, the flip side of that's a collapse, right? There's a two sides to the coin, and I think both parties were heavily involved in this one. If there was another team that was really on a juggernaut level, and maybe you want to make the case that that's the Milwaukee Bucks, or maybe you want to make the case that's the Houston Rockets, you know, those are the only two teams who I've been really impressed by so far during the postseason.
Yeah, I think those are the two. Those are the two.
Right. So, yeah. And they may have to face both of them, and then that opens up the possibility where if there's, you know, further health concerns for Golden State or something, some other variables at play, maybe that makes them vulnerable. But I still think, you know, if they get a chance to reset here, and especially if they pull themselves back together and take care of business in game three, I do think some of the panic that you're describing right now will lessen a little bit as time goes on. But, you know, there's definitely red flags around this team. Anytime you're starting basically 5 all-star level players, you've got, you know, the Hamptons 5 lineup at your disposal, you've got 2 MVPs, a whole bunch of future Hall of Famers, and you're not winning 60 games and not even really coming close to it, you're an underachieving team. You've got more problems than you're willing to let on. And absolutely, you know, mental focus, mental consistency, are at the top of their list of their question marks. So, you know, we'll see if they rally. I do think we should give Golden State credit, though. When they've been pushed in postseasons past, they've usually responded pretty well. I mean, look no further than the Western Conference Finals against the Oklahoma City Thunder a couple of years ago, the Western Conference Finals against the Houston Rockets last year. The one time they didn't was the most extraordinary of circumstances where Draymond's being suspended and, you know, everything kind of fell apart. Otherwise, they've been quite good under pressure, and they've been good at, you know, righting themselves. They're still easily the most talented team to me in this postseason field. And I say that even though they lost to Marcus Cousins to what appears to be a very serious or significant quad injury, as Steve Kerr termed it, and potentially a season-ending quad injury if the MRI that's going to be taken on Tuesday doesn't come back with good news.
Yeah, he's certainly not going to Los Angeles with the team. The team did say that he will have that MRI on Tuesday morning. So maybe by the time you guys are hearing this, we'll have more information. But yeah, it's significant. I don't know if DeMarcus Cousins comes back in this playoffs. It really just sucks for DeMarcus, who had waited 8 years for this moment. He signed with Golden State in part to have this playoff experience. I mean, he was the Kings were never good enough when he was in Sacramento to make the postseason. The Pelicans were good enough to make the postseason, but he tore his Achilles at the end of January of last year, so he couldn't participate in their playoff run, even though they won that first round against Portland. And so this was sort of his time, and he only played 25 playoff minutes, and they weren't great playoff minutes. I mean, they were pretty inconsistent, just like he had been all year. And look, that's to be expected coming back from that Achilles. But, you know...
No, it's said, Wes. I mean, this is a huge bummer for him because now he's most likely going into his second straight summer as a free agent with a major health question that's going to absolutely impact his earning value. I mean, it wasn't just about him getting over the hump to make the playoffs, to get his feet wet, to finally do it. It was also to be on a stage where he could earn himself a big payday, the type of payday that he missed out on last summer. So that's one issue. Your point, though, on his mixed play, both in the postseason and overall, is an important one. I think that maybe there's still a perception around the league that, like, Cousins makes the Warriors unfair. You know, the 5 all-star lineup is so incredible and all of that. And as people like you who cover the Warriors on a regular basis and, you know, Warriors fans, and I think other people who are more locked in on this team understand, they never really played their best basketball when Cousins was on the court, mm-hmm. right? If you look at the splits, they actually were better with Kevon Looney on the court than they were yep. with DeMarcus Cousins. And they also made what is now looking like a stroke of genius in going out there in March and signing Andrew Bogut. And that was a real question mark. It's like, where was this guy even? You know, he's been out of the NBA for years. He's playing in Australia. they're really going to be able to, you know, use Bogut in kind of a stand-in starter role, probably to fill in some of those minutes before Golden State can get on, you know, with its better lineups that involve Looney or maybe involve the Hamptons five lineup going a little bit smaller. So I think Steve Kerr actually has quite a number of options at his disposal. And I think the loss of Cousins is going to be more harmful to Cousins and his future and what it means for him as a player and the mental test that you mentioned and everything else after the extended rehabilitation and coming back, as opposed to having a huge impact on Golden State's success on the court. He just hasn't been their best option in that position. And they've got a bunch of different ways they can go.
Yeah, it's been awkward trying to fit him in. And we've seen the Clippers scheme DeMarcus like they scheme Draymond Green. And you just sag off of them, and they just go to the other three shooters on the floor. So I think the adjustments going forward, and Steve Kerr said before the game, you know, he'll make adjustments if and when he has to, but only then, right? He's not going to try to preemptively make adjustments. But Kevon Looney has been much better again. Like, the Clippers love to run pick and roll, especially with Lou Williams and Montrezl Harrell, and that's what basically killed Golden State's defense tonight. But you know, Looney does well against the pick and roll. He's their best option. Looney's there, much been, better than DeMarcus.
Right. He's been an underrated stud. And the other thing, too, after game one, I'm sure you remember, Kirk came out and said, look, it's not rocket science. We know that the Hamptons five is our best lineup. Mm-hmm. We're going to be playing that more in the playoffs than they did it in the regular season. And to me, that's another reason maybe to pump the brakes on the panic just a little bit. That group only played like 177 minutes together during the regular season, which I think for most teams, if you had the single best lineup with the best net rating in the entire league and you only played them 177 minutes, that would be considered coaching malpractice and your coach would be in some serious trouble. But for the Warriors, they already know what that group can do, how devastating it's been in both of the last two playoffs. And so now they can kind of unfurl it when they do need it here in this year's playoffs. And the Cousins injury could wind up moving up that date, right? It could say, hey, look,
no more
messing around. You've got to play this group more often. This is your best lineup. You've got to go to it more. And that will put a little bit more tax and strain on a guy like Draymond Green, asking him to play center. And same thing for Kevin Durant, who will have to do a little bit more of the heavy lifting from the rebounding standpoint. But look, that's what they're getting paid to do. That's what they want to do. And that's what they've done consistently against basically all foes, is use that lineup to run people off the court.
Only 12 minutes for the Hamptons five combined so far through those first two playoff games. I expect that to change. I think that's going to be a lot more. Let's go to Philadelphia for our other playoff game. We'll do that after the break. So the Philadelphia 76ers, speaking of teams that we thought might need to panic, the Sixers, everybody, okay, they've got cell phones on out there. Joel Embiid, is he healthy? What's the deal with Ben Simmons? He can't play in the postseason. Lots of panic after they lost game one against Brooklyn. They bounce back Monday night. They beat the Nets 145-123, led by a monster 51-point third quarter. And Ben, Joel Embiid was really good in this game. He completely dominated it, and the Sixers in general dominated from the inside out. They had 62 points in the paint compared to just 48 for Brooklyn, and that was pretty much, at least to me, that was the game.
So there was a second game on last night? No. I mean, clearly the blowout the Sixers had kind of got lost in the chaos of the Golden State Warriors game, but you know, a couple things on that Sixers game. First of all, it was pretty tight for the first two quarters. And I give Brooklyn a lot of credit, because you knew Philadelphia was going to come out and swing hard after such a, you know, laying an egg in game one. The fact that Brooklyn absorbed a lot of those blows for the first half and made things interesting, it did seem like it scared the Sixers a little bit. But they came out just red hot in that third quarter. You mentioned Embiid. He was better, but I'm still concerned about him, man. I'm not sure how well he's moving. I think he moved a little bit better in game two than in game one, and he's getting his numbers, because you know, the Brooklyn Nets are just not the most physical and imposing team inside, and I think they're going to give up a lot of stuff and just kind of get pounded inside so that they can keep their floor spread on offense and try to beat you that way. But to me, Embiid is still moving pretty gingerly. He's slow up and down the court, and I'm starting to get concerned about, you know, is he really going to be capable of holding up for the long haul? Because they've got some tough series coming up. You know, it could be you know, the Toronto Raptors in the second round, and then either Boston or you know, Milwaukee in the conference finals. I mean, he's going to have to play a lot of minutes in those types of series. He he's going to have to, you know, cover a lot of ground against some of those opponents who are going to be trying to put him out in high screen and rolls and force him to, you know, run out to shooters and all that kind of stuff. I don't know, man. There's something about watching Embiid play these first couple of games that has me a little bit nervous. I know the Sixers had a laundry list of problems in game one, but to me, that's sort of the central issue, right? Because if he's not playing like an all-NBA level player, what's their ceiling? And to me, it's not that high.
And the good news for them is that because it was a blowout, he only had to play 21 minutes, right? And so that's, you hope that you get more of that if you're the Sixers. I wonder, can you play him less than 21 minutes? Can you just sit him in the series and still beat Brooklyn? Would it be worth maybe taking this series to six or seven games and just like letting, I don't know. Like, they've got to really consider what Embiid's long-term health is, not only for this playoff run, but for the future too. I mean, Embiid, this is a thing for Embiid, right? You've got to worry about his health long-term.
Well, they have so many worries, though, Wes. I mean, the first thing they got to worry about is winning game three, because otherwise they're going to be down in the series. And I think that's how you spin it if you're Brooklyn, right? I think Kenny Atkinson's had his team ready to rock. I give him a lot of credit. You know, I like to make fun of how much regular season love the Nets have been getting for kind of a 500 type team, you know. But look, they brought it here so far in the playoffs. They're making Philadelphia sweat. And I think if you're Philadelphia, your point is well taken. Only play Embiid the minutes that he needs to play. He probably actually could have come out of game two a little bit earlier. He said he's okay, and his body's in a pretty good place. So that's a positive step forward after him being so uncertain in the hours before game one. But they still have a lot of work to do here in this series. I don't think that just because they had one incredible quarter where everybody was clicking and they kind of ran the Nets off the court there in that third quarter, I don't know if that necessarily means they've solved all their problems.
Yeah, Ben Simmons looked a little bit better. He had that triple-double, but it's still, you know, there's concerns
way,
with that.
Yeah, way better. I mean, and that was their best adjustment too, right? I mean, in game one, Ben Simmons was doing a lot of standing and watching. He was kind of a bystander, almost like a tourist. You know what I mean? In game two, it was clear the message from Brett Brown was, look, Ben, get up and down the court, push the tempo. If Embiid is dragging behind you, if he's like slow to get up the court, don't worry about him. Look at him as a trailing option after you've tried to probe the defense and tried to go downhill a little bit and collapse and get some extra attention and see if you can get to the hoop. I thought that was exactly the right adjustment. You have to keep Ben Simmons engaged if you're Philadelphia. He responded with good effort, both offensively and defensively on D'Angelo Russell. And that was much more of the all-star type Ben Simmons that we were looking for, who just did not show up at all in game one.
Before we move on to our Locked On line of the night here, we've got some head coaching news on the coaching carousel. After getting fired by the Lakers, Luke Walton, didn't take him long to find a job. He is the officially the new head coach for the Sacramento Kings. They introduced him on Monday. Ben, is this a good hire for the Kings?
It's a pretty nice hire. I mean, I think that when you're looking at Jaeger, the knock on him is that he's sort of like, Diet Tibbs, right? Like, he just wears on people. He's got, like, very forceful opinions about everything, basketball philosophy, player quality, who he wants on his team, and all this stuff. And I think what you get with Walton is a coach who is going to be comfortable with a young and upcoming roster that wants to play fast. I mean, that's right in Walton's wheelhouse, but it's also just like a more laid back guy, a better personality maybe to mix with their front office, and somebody who knows Vlade personally. And maybe won't bring up the fact that they passed on Luka Doncic, you know, every couple of weeks, like it seemed like Jaeger liked to do, right? So I'm teasing Jaeger a little bit. I think he did a really nice job in Sacramento this year, but I can see the reasons why you would want to go snag a guy like Luke Walton. And for him, I think it's great to get back on the horse, right? Like, the Lakers scenario was not his fault. I think that he was clearly a scapegoat, you know, based on a lot of factors that went wrong. I think he's a very promising addition for a franchise in Sacramento that can use all the credibility they can muster.
And he's got the California hat trick now. Three different teams he's head coached in California. So, unbelievable.
What are you saying? Watch out, Doc?
Look, it's only one more that he needs. I don't know how much – if Doc decides to retire or otherwise. I thought Jaeger – like, it was clear. You know, that Jaeger and that front office didn't get along. And that just, when that happens, the front office isn't going to fire itself. So they're going to get rid of the head coach. And so it was only a matter of time before it happened. It was not if, but when. I thought that with that season, Jaeger had earned himself one more year as head coach. But if and it seemed like they had intel that Luke Walton was going to be available, and then one they fired Yeager before Walton got fired, but I think they, like everybody knew what was about to happen, and so they snagged up Walton. So you can't really blame them for that, especially if Yeager was on the way out. And look, Yeager's done. He did this in Memphis too. He doesn't get along well with front office guys. So I thought Yeager did a really good job. Luke Walton, I think, can
No,
also do a really good
his.
job with that roster.
I mean, that's great, clean work by Walton's agent, right? Like, if you do have to get fired and thrown under the bus, and or mutually agreed to part ways, it's always nice if you're mutually agreeing to establish new ways with another organization within 24 hours, right?
Yep, and he gets the better point guard from that draft now to coach De'Aaron Fox over Lonzo Ball. So good for Luke. Let's take a quick break here. We'll get to our Locked On line of the night and then look ahead to the three playoff games we have tonight after the break. All right, Ben, time for our Locked On line of the night. Ben Simmons, 18 points, 12 assists, 10 rebounds. Lou Williams, 36 points and 11 assists. And Montrezl Harrell with 25 points, 10 rebounds. Who gets it for you?
Man, I think it's got to be Lou Will, although I hate to do that because that means I'm snubbing Montrezl Harrell, and I feel like Lou Williams gets like 10 times as much attention as Montrezl does, and both those guys are just equally valuable to what the Clippers have done. You know what? I'm changing my mind on the spot. I'm giving it to Montrezl Harrell for
I
those
like
big
that.
free throws. Those big free throws late were just clutch, were they not?
Yes, and
To ice the game, I'm giving it to Montrezl Harrell.
I like it. And look, the Warriors in game one and game two have not had an answer for Montrezl Harrell. They don't have an answer for him. When they go small, Montrezl Harrell takes advantage of them. And he's a real problem for them. Like
Wes,
25 points, 10 rebounds, I love it.
he's a
Go
great
ahead.
basketball story. I mean, a guy who just really didn't have a, like, what's his position when he's coming into the NBA? Oh, he doesn't shoot. He's not big enough to be a five. Is he going to
I
be a
was always on
tweener?
the Montrezl Harrell bandwagon. I was pumping that since Louisville.
Well,
I
you
was all
saw the
I, yeah,
future
I
because now
did.
he's spun all those narratives around, and it's like, okay, well, he might not have the cleanest positional fit, but you still have to match up with him.
I'm going with Lou Williams anyway, 36 points and 11 assists. He completely shredded Golden State's defense in that game. Without Lou Will, they don't win that game.
Well,
I'm
that's
stating the
fitting.
obvious, but I'll give it to Lou Williams. So
The
we give it to two
one-two
Clippers, and
punch.
they both,
Yeah.
yeah, and they both show up. They both do their press conferences after the. They're the new Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan, but more
But they
fun, I
actually
guess.
show up in May,
Yeah,
so
they
it'll be
show up
good.
in the playoffs. Let's look at what the teams that are down have to do to even things up tonight. Again, three playoff games tonight. Let's start with Orlando and Toronto. What do the Raptors need to do, Ben, to even up this series?
I basically just shoot better, right? I mean, I think that was sort of the issue. And also, I mean, even out the shooting battle. So they got to shoot a little bit better, and they got to limit Orlando from the 3-point line. I think that's basically where that game got lost. I mean, the other thing too is Kawhi Leonard, man. Like, if you're playing this two-man defense with another defensive player of the year in Marc Gasol, you guys got to be able to communicate. You can't be letting a guy like DJ Augustin just walk into a wide open game-winning 3-pointer. That was totally unacceptable. But to me, it was a matter of just, cleaning up a few small things. I know the Toronto fans, they love to panic. I mean, it's incredible how quickly they go from, 0 to 60 up there in Toronto. But I think the Raptors are going to be just fine here, and they're going to even the series, much like the Sixers did last night.
Yeah, that game one was kind of weird. Kyle Lowry didn't score at all. DJ Augustin scored a million points like out of nowhere, and then Marc Gasol had that chance to tie the game at the end. DJ Augustin had the chance. His three went in. Marc Gasol's didn't. That's a coin flip. It could kind of go either way. Still, it shouldn't have been that close if you're Toronto, and I don't think it will be in game two. I'm not that worried about them. San Antonio and Denver. The Spurs got game one. Another game that came down to the end there. I think that for Denver, I think Nikola Jokic has to just take on a bigger scoring role, especially at the end there. You want him to just sort of, force his will on the offensive end a little bit more. I think Jamal Murray just tried to take over the game. And I respect Jamal Murray for wanting to be the guy, but he wasn't the guy at the end. He's just not quite there yet. Jokic is the best player. He needs to have the ball in his hands at the end. I think they need to figure that part out.
I hear you, but I urge a little bit of caution there because I saw the basketball Twitter mafia all saying, look, Jokic has got to be the superstar and take over. And I think, in certain late game moments, that's absolutely true. He winds up being a little bit too passive. But their overall strategy worked. I know it didn't pay off with the win, but Jokic had like 11 assists. They generated so many wide open looks. The Nuggets do have a pretty good crop of shooters who can hit those shots. I don't think that they will shoot as poorly as they did in game one if they can generate the same quality of shots in game two. So I think if I was Coach Michael Malone there in Denver, my main message would be, guys, stick to the script. We were right there with the San Antonio Spurs. A lot of you guys are making your postseason debuts. We were one or two possessions away from winning that thing. Our formula will work. And then I would pull Jokic over to the side and say, hey, man, like late in the fourth quarter, do your thing, buddy.
Yeah, so we agree. Also, one other thing. Maybe Gary Harris should get some shots at the end. It shouldn't just be all Jamal Murray all the time. I like Gary Harris. He's their best scorer, maybe, in that backcourt. Let's give him a shot. Let's just give him a chance at the end there. We got it. Don't sleep on Gary Harris as possibly the best card on that team right now. If it means winning games in the playoffs, do it. I really like Jamal Murray. I really do. It just, I'm not sure now is his time. Oklahoma City and Portland. What does OKC have to do, Ben, to even up this series? Just get Paul George
Well,
healthy,
look,
find
if
him a
they
new
can't,
shoulder.
well, that would be number one. But look, I mean, I think it's even more basic than that. I mean, if you're going to give up 20 points and 18 rebounds to Enes Kanter in the playoffs, you deserve to go home early, like immediately. I mean, come on,
Yeah.
especially if you've had him in your team for multiple years and you know exactly what he's good at and exactly what he's bad at. I mean, to me, that's like totally unacceptable. Of all
Yeah,
the unlikely playoff
Billy
heroes.
Donovan is the first guy who knew you that you can't play Cantor in the playoffs, and then Cantor destroys them in the playoffs.
That's what I'm saying. And so that should be the most obvious adjustment. You got to get him active. Look, Kanter is also a guy who will get into foul trouble. I think he had one foul in game one. So that's not only a Billy Donovan problem, that's also a Russell Westbrook and a Paul George problem. If you're the lead ball handlers, you need to get Kanter in those pick and rolls and just go after him, get to his body, force him to foul you, attack the rim, get to the free throw line, get to the basket,
Let
all that good stuff.
Steven Adams touch the ball like once.
Yeah, and they were having some success with the dump-off pass to Steven Adams there in game one. But look, we've seen teams run like the same exact play at Kanter like 7 times in a row in the playoffs. It just basically forces coach's hand to take him out of the game. So, you know, flip that around. You know, if you're Billy Donovan, just keep jamming the ball down his throat until he finally gives up.
Yeah, maybe do more of that 1-4 pick and roll with Grant and Westbrook, because when you do it with Steven Adams, you're allowing Kanter to drop back to the paint. You're just making it a little bit easier for him. I'd like to see Donovan get a little bit more creative with that. And we're not asking for Picasso here. Just run a pick and roll with a shooter and Russell Westbrook, and maybe work it out that way. Go small with Grant at the five. I don't know, but
Yeah, and if he
there's
drops,
ways to
go
go about
after
it.
him. You know, just
Yeah,
go after him.
exactly.
Like, that's the thing, too. Like, you know, Westbrook can get a little crazy going to the basket. Paul George, you know, sometimes likes to settle a little bit too much for my liking. But, I mean, the message should be, you know, pretty obvious. Guys, it's easy pickings if you go to the hoop on Enes Kanter. He will give up layups. I mean, that's what he's been known for here for the last 5 years. I mean, don't overthink this thing.
And the one thing we haven't even mentioned his name, Damian Lillard, is the best player in this series while Paul George is hampered by this shoulder situation. It looks like a real thing. Like, this is an issue for him. He apparently can't lift it over his head, and he's been saying that. And he can't shoot, obviously, right now with that injury. So with Damian Lillard on the floor playing the way he's playing at an MVP level, right? I mean, they have by far the best player on the court, and that's a huge advantage for Portland. So I don't know. You could attack Cantor all you want, but they still got that Damian Lillard guy draining 30-point, 3-point shots off the dribble. So that's going to be a problem for them. All right, that's all we got. Remember, you could subscribe to this show on the new Himalaya Podcast app, as well as Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. And when you get in your car, tell your smart device to play the podcast Locked On NBA. Thanks to Ben Golliver. Make sure to check out his work over at the Washington Post. And thanks for listening.